process of liberation itself. In other words, the ultimate goal should always be what one is striving for. And therefore, in this age of Kali, we don't even have other processes of yoga besides Bhakti Yoga, because there's not even a possibility of ascending to the platform of self-realization through these other processes of yoga. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada also deprecates so much the idea of practicing the Ashtanga Yoga process in this age, because it's really a farce to consider for oneself or to try to induce others to that path, because ultimately one is not capable of achieving spiritual realization through that in this age. And therefore, we just find that we're taught Bhakti Yoga from the beginning. So there's a few things to say about that. One is that it's not incorrect to practice these other yoga processes. What we're hearing here is Rishabhdev speaking literally millions of years ago in the Satya Yuga, when the process of self-realization was the yoga process. One was actually capable, had the span of life, the bodily capacity, mental capacity, etc., to sit down, do the asanas, do the pranayama, breath control, do the pratyahara, remove the senses from their external engagements, to be in a peaceful atmosphere where all these things could be practiced. So he's talking about yoga here. It's appropriate for the setting. And Srila Prabhupada says even one should, mystic power should be achieved to enable one to give up the material conception. So we never hear Srila Prabhupada tell us, like, you should try to get mystic power, right? If you read any of Srila Prabhupada's books, hear his lectures, you'll very quickly understand that Srila Prabhupada says there's no point in seeking out these things. I just heard that in the lecture that I heard today on the altar. He's saying, when our father is the Yogeshwara, just as a rich man's son, he's not looking for how to gain wealth, because he understands if I get into some trouble, my father's whole, you know, wealthy estate is there to protect me. So why should I worry so much about working hard to earn lots of money? Similarly, a devotee understands if I need something, even if some, you know, mystic power is required to protect me, or, you know, to carry out some service that Krishna has given to me, Krishna will manifest that, because he's the Yogeshwara. He's the master of all yogic powers. So a devotee doesn't look for these things. So why is Srila Prabhupada saying here that mystic power should be achieved to enable one to give up the material conception? My understanding is that the practice of yoga is valid in this context, in the Satya Yuga. We're now in Kali Yuga. So for us, what's being taught doesn't include the mystic yoga process, practicing asanas, pranayama, breath control, etc., as I was describing, as chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita describes. And Srila Prabhupada specifically says that in the Nectar of Instruction. I can just paraphrase it, but I might as well just read exactly what he says, because I have it here. In the first text, in his commentary on the first texts of Nectar of Instruction, he's talking about atonement. How does one come to the level of freeing himself from the reactions of material existence? How does one come, in other words, to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, like we're hearing here? How does one recognize, really, come to the stage of being free from the bodily concept of life? So he says, one can gradually be elevated to the standard of real knowledge or Krishna consciousness by practicing austerity and celibacy, brahmacharya, by controlling the mind, by controlling the senses, by giving up one's possessions in charity, by being avowedly truthful, by keeping clean, and by practicing yoga asanas. So this is, if you're familiar with it, you'll recognize that these are yama, niyama, asana, the components of the Ashtanga yoga process. So Srila Prabhupada is saying here in the Nectar of Instruction, This is a way that one can gradually be elevated to the standard of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Krishna gives that in chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, Rishabhdev is saying, the yoga process is there. I have instructed you in this yoga process. However, that's not the end in itself. It's just a means. And it's only a means for persons who can actually execute it. It's not a means for us. So Srila Prabhupada continues in the Nectar of Instruction. However, if one is fortunate enough to get the association of a pure devotee, he can easily surpass all the practices for controlling the mind by the mystic yoga process, simply by following the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness, refraining from illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, and by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master. This easy process is being recommended by Srila Rupa Goswami. So then he goes on to explain how one controls the tongue, how one controls the mind, how one controls the senses, etc., in Krishna consciousness. So, in this age, it's easy to get stuck. Well, first of all, it's not easy to come to spiritual life at all, right? Most people are not interested in spiritual life at all. But once one comes to some sense of spiritual life, to try to ascend through the yoga process is not recommended, because the opportunity for getting stuck in some portion of that is very high. What to speak of the fact that we don't have the capacity really to perform it anyway, but even for somebody who does, the attractions of these other types of yoga are that one can get great wealth, or one can get great knowledge or position, one can get mystic powers even. And these things become another stumbling block for one who to forget the fact that all of these things are not actually what I'm after. I'm only after the end goal, becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. So for that reason, Srila Prabhupada has, not just Srila Prabhupada, Srila Rupa Goswami, all of our acharyas in this line, because they're teaching for the people of Kali Yuga, Vyasadev, Srimad Bhagavatam, is telling us, forget about all of that, just practice devotional service, because the means and the end are the same. Therefore, you don't get confused. The means is service to Krishna under the guidance of the spiritual master, and the end is becoming para-bhakti, becoming transcendental, so that one can continue in his relationship with Krishna from a spiritual platform. And there's various things like this that, you know, we have a very reduced form of yoga practice, because we're not capable of even encompassing all the other components of things, even within our own line of acharyas. For instance, Rupa Goswami taught that one should worship Ganesh to become free from the obstacles on the path of devotional service. And that's in the nectar of devotion. One should worship Ganapati. It's one of the regulative principles of devotional service, sadhana bhakti. One should worship Ganapati. That's Shiva, Ganesh. So the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, this is a nectar of devotion, so why aren't you teaching us how to worship Ganesh, Srila Prabhupada? This is Rupa Goswami, just 500 years ago, writing this nectar of devotion, learning from Lord Chaitanya and giving Lord Chaitanya's mercy to us, as we heard some of that from Maharaj recently, about how Rupa Goswami received the fullness of Lord Chaitanya's mercy to spread that for the benefit of the living entity. So he's teaching worship Ganesh, and Srila Prabhupada is saying, don't worship Ganesh. Why? Because as these great acharyas are approaching the more and more progressively, you know, degraded situation of Kali Yuga and trying to help the people out of that, they have to utilize their spiritual vision to see who is actually capable of performing or following these different rules and regulations. So Srila Prabhupada told them, if I give you the worship of Ganesh, because Ganesh will very easily fulfill your material desires, then you'll become distracted by trying to receive material benedictions from Ganesh. So rather than Ganesh, as also is described in the Nectar of Devotion, Ganesh worships Lord Nrsimha for his power. So rather than worshiping Ganesh, Srila Prabhupada just gave us worship of Lord Nrsimha, or Nrsimha Pranam specifically, because that's mostly what Srila Prabhupada gave them. We don't have, like, worship Nrsimha deities in the temple so much and stuff, but there are some places where we have the form of Lord Nrsimha, like Mayapur and other temples. We have a picture here, but so we worship Lord Nrsimha for that aspect of removing the obstacles from our progress in Krishna consciousness. For example, so there are things that are bona fide, even within the Vaishnava tradition, what to speak of, Satya Yuga practice of Ashtanga Yoga, that we cannot actually approach and utilize properly at this time because they'll distract us from the path. So it's becoming more and more and more narrow what is the actual way in which you can become free from the material conception of life. What's the process that you can actually follow? It's becoming more and more, just to put it in a few words, it's becoming more and more dependent upon association with the pure devotees of the Lord. And that's what we heard also in the Nectar of Instruction, that one can surpass all of these things, the yoga process, not just because, I don't want to follow that, I'm going to be sentimental and I love Krishna or something like that. That doesn't work either. You have to follow a bona fide process. But what is that process in this age? You can simply, if you can accept the association of a pure devotee, that's a big if you can accept the association of a pure devotee, then you can surpass all of that. So actually that's our only opportunity. That's actually our only opportunity. And it's not that that wasn't there before. It's just that so many people were capable of following these other processes that, okay, some persons would associate directly with the pure devotee of the Lord and others would follow this process of gradual elevation, to achieve the goal. And at different levels, people have different receptivity and different capacity to just accept spiritual life. But in this age, if you don't accept the association of a pure devotee, you get nothing, practically speaking. You really don't get anything. So this Krishna consciousness movement is trying to help people come to that understanding and give them the opportunity that the association of pure devotees, that's what we're hearing about. Pure devotee doesn't necessarily only mean like Srila Prabhupada, pure devotee here. We heard Srila Prabhupada also express, when one actually engages in devotional service, one does not need to practice the mystic yoga system. So that devotional service that's being described isn't just like people come on Sunday and do kirtan and like that kind of thing. It's regulated devotional service under the guidance of a spiritual master. If one is unflinching in the execution of devotional service, that is in itself Brahma-Bhuta, or the spiritual platform. And as Srila Prabhupada said, one should immediately accept the instructions of the spiritual master without deviating, without surpassing those instructions, trying to carry out his devotional service in a different way, because that actually takes us outside the platform of spiritual life. But one who practices sadhana bhakti properly, sadhana bhakti is performed on the liberated platform, surrendered, undeviating practice of sadhana bhakti is actually on the spiritual platform. So the Krishna consciousness movement is made to bring people to the platform of liberation as soon as they can accept the instructions of a pure devotee and live their life accordingly. Therefore, people outside get the opportunity to come in contact with a pure devotee very relatively more easily than they might otherwise, just by somehow Narada Muni flying into their life. Rather, just the people that they work with, or the people that they meet on whatever street, or they come to the temple or something, they have the opportunity to associate with somebody who actually has the capacity to give them the chance to reach spiritual realization. So I think I covered what I felt like wanted to cover. I feel like I'm forgetting something, but I don't see something that's really sticking out. So any comments or questions on the yes, Prabhu.
Question about this undeviating point. You were saying that one who performs sadhana bhakti undeviatingly. And I guess my question was, you know, when I think sadhana bhakti, I think not fixed, you know, with the aspiration of becoming fixed. So, and maybe that's a misconception I'm carrying. So then it doesn't make sense to me that sadhana would be undeviating.
Yeah.
However, at the same time, I think based on Prabhupada's purports and the ways it was being explained, you could say that even the sadhaka is fixed undeviatingly if the definition is, you know, if he's fully surrendered to the spiritual master. So how do we understand this concept more clearly? Just I'm a little fuzzy on the understanding.
My simple understanding is, yes, you're right. And until we're completely beyond the anarta-nivritti process, then we're not going to be able to be completely without ups and downs in our practice of devotional service. So that's a given, and Krishna knows that, and he says in the Bhagavad Gita, apichat sudaracharo bhajate mama nanyabhak sadareva samantavya samyagvavasitohisa, that one who is unflinchingly engaging in devotional service, even if he does something abominable, if he remains fixed, then he should be considered a saintly person. A sadhu, a pure devotee, because he's following the right process. In other words, Krishna is saying, whatever's happening now is not due to his lack of spiritual understanding. It's just due to the fact that he hasn't completed the process yet. So association with such a person is desirable, because such a person does not have a concept of fruitive activity or speculation as his, as something that he's interested in. Rather, he's just becoming purified by the process of devotional service, and that's not a fault. It's rather just a reality that the process, that purification takes some time. So the undeviating, that's why there's a difference between a devotee who is capable of being like a, that we would call like an acharya, and a devotee who we might also call a pure devotee, who would not take that position because they are, you know, not on that platform. But it doesn't mean that they don't have qualification to be within the realm of pure devotional service. The ups and downs, as also is in that same text of Nectar of Instruction that I was reading from text one, the atonement for such a person is just to continue with their devotional service. There's no, like, you know, fiddling around with like, I'm still not quite situated in devotional service. Yeah, it's just, you know, right back up and keep going. So if we consider it from that viewpoint, that it's like, you know, the moon, and if some spot is seen on the moon, it doesn't mean that the moonlight is not as potent. So, you know, such a person or us, whatever we're considering in devotional service, if we're actually practicing properly, it means that our only consideration will be, how can I, you know, continue to carry out the instructions? And if I happen to trip and fall, and, you know, then I get up immediately and I'm following the instructions again immediately. That's devotional service. When we become completely purified is not really up to us. Vidhunoti Suhrit Satam. Krishna is the one who's cleaning out all that stuff. So, you know, this International Society of Krishna Consciousness was established so that people can associate with pure devotees. Who are those pure devotees? It's not only the person who has practiced for 40 years and achieved a very high stage of devotional service, free from any, you know, mistakes. It's anybody who has surrendered, as he stated in Nectar of Instruction, to following these four principles and following the instructions of the spiritual master. That's a pure devotee in that sense of the word. So while there are still other higher levels of devotional service to be attained, right? Because there's sadhana bhakti and then there's raga nuga sadhana bhakti before you get to bhava and prema bhakti. So sadhana bhakti, vaidhi sadhana bhakti, it doesn't require that one is not, and that doesn't require, it means if one's actually following it properly that one is on the liberated platform. And then raga nuga just means that you have a spontaneous attraction for serving. But the other is also serving. It's just serving out of regulation or obligation, you can say, to the spiritual master. But it's still on the spiritual platform. So, and then for us, I kind of heard in your question, the application point is like, well, maybe you didn't mean this, am I practicing devotional service as it's being described here, you know, because there are ups and downs? And the answer is yes, if we are in that mindset that I don't need to resort to anything else for my happiness, I'm just going to continue engaging in devotional service. If something comes up that overwhelms me, you know, and I just get back on the horse and keep riding. You know, I don't resort to karma or jnana to try to improve my situation. That's pure devotional service in that stage of practice. Of course, one can say also nishtha means pure devotee in sadhana bhakti. So that's also true, because that person is not going to come down ever. But in the sense that that Krishna is explaining in Bhagavad Gita, one doesn't have to be at the nishtha platform necessarily. One can still have ups and downs. But what is the trajectory? It's always ever upward. It's never stopping and trying to somehow make a nice place in the material world. It's just up, 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 up. So, and then when the term like pure devotee and devotional service and all these things come up, it's difficult to define a lot of times, because Srila Prabhupada would say, you know, you are all pure devotees because you're on the path of purity, you know. And then pure devotee also means this. So which one is it? It's all of them. It just depends on what stage we want to talk about. Depends on what stage we want to hone in on for some particular purpose. So, yeah. It does mean ups and downs. Sadhana bhakti. But not for everybody. One can be practicing sadhana bhakti on the nishtha platform. And the ups and downs don't disqualify one from being considered a sadhu. One just comes down from the liberated platform sometimes because of anarthas that are not yet removed. That's my understanding of what it means. Sadhana bhakti itself is always on the liberated platform, but one can, you know, doesn't stay there steadily until he comes to a higher stage. Hare Krishna. Does that make sense to everybody? If anybody wants to add anything to that or ask anything else, I'm certainly not perfect in my explanation. 8:15.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yes, Mataji.
Thank you for the class. I had a question about the portion where Prabhupada was saying one should immediately act on the spiritual master's instruction.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a lot of sense, but it it's a little confusing when I think of Prabhupada's life and some of the instructions he received and how long it took him to, for them to fully flourish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even like the instruction of taking sannyas, he had to have dreams, you know, three times his spiritual master had to come to him to ask him to take sannyas, and finally he's like, okay, I'll do it. So I just wanted to understand a little bit more about that, those situations.
Hmm.
Thank you.
I guess probably a good place to start would be like separating Srila Prabhupada's situation from the normal one that Srila Prabhupada is talking about here. Just for the sake of, you know, proper consideration of that type of personality. That Srila Prabhupada's whole life, he said, I never committed a sin in my life. You know, Srila Prabhupada's whole life was Krishna conscious from, like, I just was hearing that the other day, that devotee was expressing, a reporter was badgering him, like, when did you become God-realized, Swamiji? When did you become God-realized? When did you become God? And he didn't answer right away because of just kind of humbly saying, anybody can follow this process and all that. And then finally, he said, I first became God-realized when I was 5 years old. You know. And then he said, actually, there was never a time when I didn't remember Krishna. So that's Srila Prabhupada. You know, in that context, the discussion doesn't really have as much of a relevance because it's considered to be lila as opposed to like progressing towards purification or something like that. So, but taking it as like a general understanding for application in our reality, what does it mean to immediately carry out the instructions of a spiritual master? Even if we look at Srila Prabhupada's life as an example of how we can practice devotional service, which it is, most of the instructions that we receive aren't like, go to the West and spread Krishna consciousness everywhere. Even you could say most of the instructions that Srila Prabhupada received weren't like that. That was like the big instruction. The other instructions are, you know, hearing what the spiritual master is saying in his, you know, when he's speaking or in his books or whatever, and following those things in one's life. That's like the main portion of the instructions. We may have another instruction that's like, hey, I would like you to do this, or please attempt to carry this out, or something like that, you know. And that may also be there for some person, as it was for Srila Prabhupada. But in the meantime, one's life is molded around the understanding of how to be a Vaishnava, how to conduct one's fits together so perfectly. The timing when he came, the things that he came with, like Chaitanya Prabhu was saying, you know, the Bhagavatam, he had that, and, you know, so many things. It's just like, you know, just it's Krishna's arrangement, obviously, for it to work out the way he wanted it to work out. Anyway, any other comments or questions? Anything? As far as I know, unless some other message is there. He asked if we're going on Harinam. Yeah. I haven't heard anything different, so. Anyway, 10 minutes before we have to go in hurry now. So, any other comments or questions about the class? Or? No? Okay. Then Harinam. Yeah. I mean, we can still go, I guess. You know, not like, it'd be nice if he was there, but if he's not there, then we can still go, I guess. Okay. Thank you all for listening. For the Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Would you like me to play cards? Yeah, I'll play cards.
Yeah.